Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. Today's guest is Alex Dick, and my co-presenter is Dan Alexander. Alex is from his own company, which is called Alexander Lyons, and they're a remote-first business. Lots of us have remote-first businesses, and I've been doing this for a long time, remote-first, and it's bloody hard to scale something. And I think it's probably why we've ended up building an advisory sales community and a recruitment business into one. It's very hard to get P&Ls up to a decent size and find people that you can trust that can bill independently. And he's managed it. So here's the secrets to his success. Also, it hasn't come without a few bloody noses, and he's happy to tell those stories as well. As ever, this podcast is sponsored by Sourcewell and Luxor, two businesses that we rely heavily on in our own business. All right, over to Alex.
Hi, Dan Alexander here, and this episode is brought to you by Recwired, the all-in-one go-to platform for serious recruitment professionals, owners, and founders who are looking to grow their businesses. Now, we'll actually be launching the new online platform very soon, and if you'd like to be one of the first people to get access to our state-of-the-art learning platform and vault of online resources, then get in touch with us through the link in the description of this episode.
All right, welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. I'm joined by my co-host, Dan Alexander. How are you, Dan?
I'm well, my friend. Very well.
Are you sure?
Yeah, there was real like hesitation in that.
You know, someone says, if you need a someone asks you a question, you're right. You're not sure you are.
are you new dad? Well, is that what's happened?
Yeah, it's ropey at the moment, but we've just kicked him out of our room, so he's kicking up a stink.
Nice. Okay. Nice. Yeah. You can power through it.
I've been and there, who is the third Mitchell twin? Who is this?
I'm not sure. We're definitely all chose a look today.
I'll tell you what. It is Alexander Dick. Is it Alexander Dick? Is that what you call yourself?
Only if I'm in trouble. Alex.
Have you ever been in trouble?
Maybe. Maybe.
Okay, no comment. No comment.
My legal name is Alexander Dick, but no, Alex.
All right, very good. All right, so last week we talked to a really pumped up young man, Anthony Kelly, who is fired up. He's going to make loads of money. He's got loads of grads in an office. And he loves it, and he's mad into it. So we thought we'd reverse it and have Mr. Remote Recruitment, the non-conforming Alexander Dick from Alexander Lyons, to talk to us about how it works remotely. And can you build culture remotely? Can you build sales team? Does it work? How do you pump them? I wish I knew, because mine are off in the pub right now.
Yeah. Yours are all over the world as well. At least mine are geographically in roughly one place.
They say leadership starts at the top, isn't it? So I'm probably a bad example. I'm excited. My folks have arrived. They're in Marbella, so we're going to drop the kids there, and then we've got myself and Charlotte are going to do a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class in Tormelines tonight, and then I think we're staying in Tormelines and then back to Marbella for dinner tomorrow. So
nice, bit of a break from the kids.
Kids free weekend.
And that's the dream. That is the dream.
Bosun.
Have you guys rolled together in terms of like actually trying to kill each other?
No, not at all. She's in the she's in the beginners class, and like she just like we just wouldn't work. Like I'm tapping.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll not go down that road.
I was wondering.
I wish we could roll around a bit more often, in fairness, but we have two kids. So, look, great to have you here. Give us a wee insight into the size of your business, what you do.
16 of us, likely to be 20 imminently when I stop being lazy and get around to saying yes to a few people. So there's quite a few people that want to join at the moment. So trying to get to sort of 20 is a bit of a sort of reflection point.
Reflecting on what?
The journey and the hash I've made of it in various ways. No, so there are certain points where I want to get to a certain level of billers and then allow the people sort of that have come in to build up their themselves to a reasonable level and then repeat and repeat and repeat. So I did go a bit nuts. And when I first started hiring people, I just hired anyone because I believed naively that all recruiters actually were able to do recruitment, which turns out not to be the case. I started hiring under the assumption that everyone could do what I was doing and that recruitment was easy. And might have lost a few quid down that road. But as you are fully aware, lost a few quid, but
lost a few laptops as well, right?
Yeah. Got a few good stories off the back of it. So one day there'll be a good book.
Any you'd like to share today?
Let's get into those. Let's warm up to those.
Let's warm up. All right. Okay. Look, we've all had a bad hire here or there. It happens. It happens to the best of us. But so what do you recruit for? What's the business do?
So the business is designed to be the best home for 360 recruiters. Experienced 360 recruiters. So our commission is quite decent compared to a number of other businesses on the market. So it goes up to 80%. Our flexibility is, you can't get more flexibility. So people can only match us. They can't beat us because we are infinitely flexible. People can work from anywhere. People can basically come and go as they please, but we only hire people that have made it work previously and are confident that they can continue in a similar vein. So and we have thankfully got better at that in recent times.
Let me jump into a couple of questions there.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I have a remote business as well, right? I've gone down the experienced hire route and I've gone down the make our own route, turning VAs into billers. Now that suited us better for the business we want to run. As you know, we run the advisory and community-based business as well. And I would say we're steering probably more into that element. But it wasn't for want of trying. And picking a winner remotely that's going to fit a culture, like, firstly, what did you get wrong how did you choose wrong? And then what did you do to fix it?
So assuming everyone is honest and everyone doesn't just want the flexibility to take the piss was one of the biggest mistakes we made in the very early days. And I think I told you when we first spoke that it wasn't helped by the fact that I'm a competitive child and a rec at the sort of very early steps of 2021 went to me, oh, no one's ever going to want to join you because you're a small business that doesn't know anything. A small business that Lars billing sort of well over £1 million personally. But so I was like, it's a reasonably successful small business, but whatever. They told me no one would want to join me. So there was a bit of a sort of, fuck you. Can I swear on this, by the way?
You sure can.
Yeah, fine. So there was a bit of a fuck you. I'm going to prove otherwise. And so I went a bit hell for leather. And that, so I wasn't in truth in the early days overly picky because, as I said a bit earlier, I went into it with the assumption that everyone was a good recruiter and that everyone had the ability to do well. Mm. And soon realized the hard way that is, in fact, not the case. There are very good people out there, but there are also some complete turds who when you talk to them tell you that they're the best thing since sliced bread when actually they're fairly mediocre at best. And we had a fair share of them towards the beginning of our time. So we had a lot of people who would, like the first one as an example, so had a recruiter start. She said, I've got a friend who's really keen to do it. He's got this massive book of pharma candidates and clients, and he's going to do really well. So he comes on board, and we're having sort of morning calls, and he's sat there, and one day he forgot he had his camera on, and he sat there drinking, I think it was a cider. Sort of first thing in the morning, we're talking sort of 9:15 in the morning, playing his Xbox, smoking a cigarette, eating last night's curry. And yeah, it didn't take a deep dive shortly after that to realize that he was actually just sitting there and that was his working day, because he thought, well, I'm remote, nobody's going to know what I'm up to and I can get away with it. And of course, the system is still the same system you'd be using if you're in a business. Like, we still have the same reporting functionality. We still have the same sort of back office that you would have if you were somewhere in an office. Because yeah, most packages are web-based now. So
yeah, walk me through what the qualification is now. So like, when you to make sure lads don't like work in their underwear with a bottle of cider and eating last night's curry.
Well, to be fair, they can work in their underwear with a bottle of cider as long as they're actually doing the job. Like, the main issue I had with that was the not doing the job. I'd work in your underwear all you like. You know, like, yeah. But yeah, the bit we're doing now, we've just become far more mature in our hiring process. So there's additional elements to it. There's more questioning of performance. There's more evidence required. There's way more.
How far do you go?
It depends on the person.
If somebody triggers you a little bit, you're like, okay, we need to deep dive.
No, to be honest, if someone triggers me, I tend to just walk away. So when I get a trigger thinking something's not right, I tend to just stop the process and move on with somebody else. Because
you got a sound effect ready for me? Have you got a sound effect ready for me? If there is doubt, there is no doubt.
I don't have a sound effect for that. I've got crickets chirping. I can do that if you like.
That's a great quote. I need something positive. All right, but like, in terms of qualification, you look at their billings. How far do you go with it? Because like, everybody lies. So
yeah, so people aren't good at maths, which is quite handy. So first thing I ask is, what is their commission structure and how much commission they earned? And then what did they bill? And then often those numbers don't tally up in any way at all. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. You've just told me your commission structure and what you're supposedly earning, but that doesn't tally up with what you say you're doing. So that's an easy one. And it's amazing how many people sort of get a bit nervous and anxious. Often I'll ask to speak to people's clients. So if someone's that confident about their ability to bring a client, let me have a chat with them. Like, I want to hear directly from them how good they are. And again, if someone's...
Have you followed through on that?
Yeah.
Have you had anyone that didn't work out?
No, because thankfully to date, no one's been stupid enough to say yes to that.
Make sure he doesn't call me again.
Yeah. And to be honest, a lot of it's gut instinct now. As you know, we've had our fingers burnt a few times, and I believe in learning from those mistakes pretty quick. And so if we see characteristics that we've seen in previous people that haven't made it work, that's what we base our judgments on. And then of course, there's levels of experience that we need to see. There's commitment to actually staying in businesses rather than jumping from one to the other, because there are way too many recruiters out there that in the last 3 or 4 years have had 10, 15 jobs and everyone they've left because it was a toxic manager and all of that sort of stuff. It's like, okay, maybe once, maybe twice, but 15 times later, I think you have to start looking in the mirror and going, am I the problem? And so I see quite a lot of that as well. And that again is something that is off-putting. So the main thing is, has someone been somewhere doing something for long enough to make it possible that they were decent at it? Do we know that business is somewhere that wouldn't keep them if they weren't?
So that's an intelligence thing, right? If someone keeps making the same mistake over and over and not actually learning from it, it's always everybody else's fault. Like,
yeah,
what you're talking about, Alex, smacks to me of professional interviewers, you know, that are... It's the same way you qualify salespeople, right? Any sales recruiters out there digging into commission, digging into numbers. And the people that get cagey about that, or why are you asking me those questions? Straight away, you know, like, okay, if you don't want to talk openly about some of this stuff, then you're probably not actually someone I'm interested in talking to anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing how many can't even answer it. I don't know what I've billed. The number of times I've heard people go, I don't know what I build. And I'm looking going, right, so you're in a sales job to make money and you don't know what you're doing. Like, it just, and then there's always an excuse of, oh, that's not how it works. I'm like, okay, you find me a recruitment business that doesn't care that you put money on the board or not. Like, it's not a thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that. But if you dig deeper, what you'll probably find is that they just haven't been appraised properly throughout. So as part of that management structure, they've just been kind of left run. And then they've just kind of ran with it and they don't really get managed. Where if you're in a proper company, they're bringing you in, they're showing you your targets, where you're at, where, like, why haven't you done it? Let's go to the numbers. Let's look at it. But not all companies are professional. And it's, I think you get a lot of people looking for an easy ride with remote recruitment roles.
Oh yeah. Big time. Big time.
Like what, like how far, like how, you mentioned up to 80% commission and you mentioned 100% flexibility. What do they need to demonstrate to you to make that worth your while?
The ability to bill, basically. The ability to actually deliver and the maturity to want to do it without having to be hit with a stick every 2 seconds. Because what we are hiring are people who are self-motivated, who want to succeed because of the things that are put there for them when they succeed, not they want to succeed for fear of what happens if they don't succeed. And it's sort of reversing that balance. And the reality is, you've got to bear in mind, I come from an environment where my recruitment model that I was placing when I was doing my own thing was remote workers in legal. So I've been through this entire journey over a 14-year or so period in legal, taking lawyers, moving them from paid roles as fee earners, moving their clients across, placing them in environments where they're solely responsible for their desk and what they do. So I'm well versed in the remote working thing. And we're not talking I've done that once or twice. It's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So, and I got to the point where I was doing, I think my best month was 27 partner level lawyers in 1 month. So I've got quite used to on an industrial scale, working out whether it's right for somebody or wrong for someone. And a load of the is it right or wrong attitude bits carry across, because the ability to work in remotely and have that self-motivation and stuff carries across sort of every area of work, really. So we're just taking the knowledge from, I guess, the thousands and thousands and thousands of lawyers that I spoke to doing that, and then replicating it in this, and now being less naive because I'm not as much of a pillock as I was at the beginning, thinking that I want a million people within the first 8 minutes of opening the business.
How quickly before, like, if you're interviewing somebody, how quickly before you realize they're not right for you?
Normally less than 5 minutes.
And how quickly before you tell them that?
About 5.1 minutes.
Cool.
So, So I lay it on thick. All the negatives of coming here is the first thing I do when I'm speaking to somebody. So I don't sell joining us. I sell the negatives of being with us and all of the things that we expect at the beginning, and see how they react to that. And if they react to that saying, I'm not bothered at all and this is why, then the conversation carries on. But 9 times out of 10, somebody will go, oh, no, I want this that you're not offering, or I want this, or I would prefer...
Give me a negative.
Well, most people, most people, as you'll know, rec to rec, most people want to be in an environment where there's a warm desk, and they don't want the pressure to be on them. They want the pressure to be on other people to be bringing in the work, and they want to do delivery and call it 360. But actually, they want to be in an environment where there's a bank of clients that they can work on, and house accounts and all of that sort of stuff. And the opening gambit when people say that to me is, no, we don't have that. So, if you want that, we're the wrong home. Like, I did one this morning and it was 3 minutes. Because I said, do you know much about us? They said, no, that's a bit of an alarm bell already. And then it's, because it's not like we're not that vocal about what we're up to. And then it was, right, this is how we work. And they went, and I went, it's probably not for you, is it? And they went, no. I'm like, okay, no worries, good luck. And that was it. I was a bit politer about it because I'm always polite, but conceptually that conversation wasn't going anywhere. So I wish them the best of luck in their future endeavors and said, if your position ever changes, feel free to get back in touch. So, yeah.
You've done a good job of stealing my poster child of being the remote working person out there. I'm happy for you. But it also raises the question, why is the UK so far behind? Like in the States, this is commonplace. Even in Ireland, like remote working is really the norm. But everybody just wants people in an office in the UK. What do you think that stems from?
Tradition. And America is, I can't speak for Ireland because I've not done any business in Ireland, but in America, you've got a much wider area and it's more common that businesses are in multiple states. And if you've got businesses in multiple states, especially if they're quite far apart, sometimes you might need people in the middle, or they're operating in different states from a base and the country's so large, yeah, practically it's helpful to have people about. Whereas if you think in England, you would have sort of the roving salesman that would put their suitcase in their Vauxhall Carlton or whatever and be driving up the M1. Yeah. So our structure that we always operated here was you have a home base which you travel from, but because the country's not that big, you can kind of get anywhere within a day. So salespeople have always gone to the client visit. So when I first started in recruitment, one of my patches was Newcastle. And so if I needed to see someone, I would just get in the car and go to Newcastle. And I think that's a sort of we traditionally have done it that way. And certainly in professions like, and I speak for legal more than I do for recruitment because I recruited in that for longer, but I'm sure recruitment's the same. Businesses are based in an area. They service that area. And often with recruitment businesses, they service that area. If you're a London recruiter, you service London. And so it makes sense. And it's a very easy argument to be in the office because it's like, we all work together here. It's a team atmosphere. And if you need to see your client, you get on a tube rather than have to put more of an effort into it. So, and then also if you've got a massive London office and you've spent an absolute fortune on it, you're probably going to want people to be back in it because a sort of 40 grand a month lease with nobody in it, it must be quite depressing as an owner of a business. So if you have people in it, at least you feel like you're getting your money's worth. So I think there's an element of that as well. But I think COVID let the cat out of the bag that remote working can work. And I don't think that's a situation that's going to change. And it doesn't matter how many times people go, oh, sales environments can't work in this way, or law firms can't work in this way, or whatever. Time and time again, they're proved wrong. Okay. So how many times does someone have to be proved wrong before they go, oh, okay, maybe it does work? But it's horses for courses. If people want people in the office, that's cool. But that doesn't mean everyone wants to be in an office. So people like the likes of myself and yourself, we operate an alternative that allows people to work from where they want, which ironically does include an office. I've got a new starter who wants to work from an office 3 days a week. And that's fine. I am paying for an office 3 days a week so that she can go work from an office for those 3 days a week. It's not a problem. I'm
moving into a new office on Monday. I want to go to an office because getting too distracted. But yeah, it's a difficult one. I think a lot of it is the age profile as well. We take in young people to recruitment in the UK more than anywhere else. And it is, you know, it's bums on seats and one in three survive. And then they have a couple of kids, they do whatever, they're out there, and then you hire them once they're really experienced. And
yeah, I'll let everyone else do all the training bit. And then I'll just, yeah, basically the way I view it now is that every other recruitment business is just a really, really good L&D platform for me. And I'll just sort of sit there and hopefully wait for them to waft in my direction.
Dan, what did he say there?
Yep.
What did he say?
Deliberate in my wording.
What companies do you target then for great trained people?
So in truth, there aren't companies I target. There are companies I see I'm getting more out of. So I've got a lot of people from quite decent biotech companies at the moment who are approaching me. Can't tell you why, but yeah, there's, and I know those businesses are decent because I have some biotech people in my business who are doing exceptionally well, who were telling me about those businesses when they joined as being proper competitors and sort of powerhouses in their areas. To be honest, I think even within businesses, it's more the individuals that people fall under that shape the person they become rather than the businesses training in isolation. Because it's not just the training, it's how it's implemented and then how the people are managed as to whether that helps them succeed or helps them be sort of have their flame be dulled. So I think it's a two-pronged approach. I think I've always believed it's just about as much about managing to get the best out of people as it is learning and development. And I think the two go hand in hand. And I think a lot of businesses invest very heavily in learning and development, but then have really shite managers that then basically ruin all of the good work that's been put in by the L&D people to teach these people to be great. And that's a complaint that I hear a lot, because I do get junior people applying quite a bit. And I do speak to them because they're my future candidate base. And a lot of the time I'm hearing, look, they've taught me to do something. I'm doing what they say is going well. And now I've got this moron that's basically having a go at me about something that completely doesn't matter. And I'm doing really successfully, but yet they're moaning at me because I haven't done X. And that X was relevant 2 years ago when they first started out, but now they're way further down their line, but they're so holding on to a KPI that was relevant at the very, very beginning that becomes less and less relevant as that human develops. And yeah, it just frustrates people. And again, the trouble with people having worked remotely in those businesses for a while over sort of the COVID period and a bit after is they then saw what it was like to not be micromanaged, and they were just as often just as successful, sometimes more successful. And now they're going back to environments where they're being sort of over the top managed and going, hang on a minute, I've demonstrated I can do the job and you're treating me like a child and I'm not enjoying that. And yeah, again, those people end up tending to try and find a new home. But
yeah, I think it some of it's natural, you know, like it's so hard starting. So like your first 2 years are so intense that if you've done it and you've done all right, I remember myself back in Robert Walters, by the end of the 3 years, I was like, I don't know if I could, I could go through this. Like, I'm really appreciative of it. Like you've given me a great ground and I could go set up my own business. I could go do lots of things, but like, oh, that was tough. Like that was hard. Like you would know yourself, Dan, from CD, like how many people survive 5 years and go through the grind and make it through? I know the people who do have an unbelievable career, but like it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the thing, because we touched on this last week, how you don't pick your sport picks you, and the people that just aren't cut out for this won't actually make it. Just want to touch back on one of the things that Alex has just said there, which I think is a really important point to make. A lot of the managers do undo the work of L&D consultants, right? And that's because the L&D consultants let the managers do it. Sometimes people in that capacity and position are sort of looked down on by managers. And if a billing manager will turn around and go, actually, no, you just spent 2 hours training that. Don't do it that way. Don't do it this way. If you don't put that in check as an L&D consultant, that's your fault.
Yeah.
If you're letting the managers run over you, like, you deserve every cliche that people say about trainers. You've got to be one of the best and the strongest people in that business to force a mold on certain people. People miss that. So that's really, really key. You want one of your strong, like, you don't want just someone that likes training to be the L&D consultant. You want that L&D consultant to be one of the best salespeople within your business.
Yeah.
That's what these people need. You know,
leading from the front, basically.
And Dan, what can people do if they can't afford you full time? Tell the people what they need to hear here, Dan. Come on.
Well, it just so happens, Dalton, that we've developed an online platform. Would you know? It's in development. It's in the beta phase right now. We've got people coming on board, but essentially, that information is going to be available to you, right? So it's not enough just to have training. Like, what training? And actually, Alex is bang on the money. The pedigree of who's giving you that information, be it a great manager, or it doesn't have to come specifically from the business. You've got the DNA of someone within that business. So make sure that you're getting that right information. Yeah, we've developed a blueprint, which is proven. And a lot of great businesses have come out of the likes of CD and S3 and a few other businesses out there for a reason, because they've got, exactly as Alex has said, there's a pedigree of training great people in certain companies.
Hey, it's fun. So, it's fun breaking this down, because so Dan's put it all down on paper as much as he can, and he's put his ego on the line and all the rest. And then I'm going through it with a samurai sword. Charlotte's going through it with a chainsaw. Andy Hallett will go through it. And then we're going to get 50 absolute killer companies to rip through it on a beta. And then we reassess it. And then we have something that will work for everybody. But I find there's nothing really out there that'll really train your people from start to finish that is aligned to companies that have done it well. And so I was thinking about your company. What's the grown-up version of your company? Like, if you were to go, we could be like this company in 5-10 years and have their event. Like, what is that? When you've spoke to non-executive directors, what type of blueprint are they putting in front of you?
So the honest truth, in our sector, there isn't something I look at and go, I want to be like that. That is the honest truth. Everything I look at, I go, okay, I like a bit of that, and I like a bit of this, and I like a bit of that. But there is no business that I wish to emulate within the world of recruitment. There are businesses outside of the world of recruitment that have created amazing platforms that people are passionate about, that people want to be part of, that put their people first, and all of that sort of stuff. That is what I'm trying to create. And I'm trying, but that's why I say I'm not trying to create the best recruitment business in the world. I'm trying to create the best home for the best people.
Yeah.
And it's a very.
The Lonely Hearts Club, right?
Well, let's not have them lonely, and let's not call it a club. Let's call it a cult. We want to create a cult. But yeah, we attract some quite unusual people because of that. Yeah. Some quite eccentric people, but people that have been and are very, very successful. But as you know, we've also, the negative is we've also attracted some people that appear like that and are actually complete reprobates. Should we tell the story of
roughly? You can tell the story. It's your story, my friend.
Fine. So how we actually met was I put a post on LinkedIn, and I will leave some details out for our benefit, just because I can't be bothered with the grief. But I had a member of staff who joined us as a business. And originally I didn't want to do the recruiting for the business because I was like, I need to be concentrating on managing it. So I hired an internal rec to rec, and this was somebody who'd been in the world of rec to rec for a long time, had 19,000-20,000 recruitment contacts on their profile, and had been doing it for themselves and doing it at other businesses and all that sort of stuff. So seemed on the face of it, and bear in mind, this was my naive stage, seemed on the face of it to be a bit of a superstar. And I know a number of other people have fallen into the same trap in the past. We should call it the catfish. So we then get catfished and hire this individual and they join us, and we sat there and they tell us that 19,000 profile they have is still attached to their old company, so they're trying to get it back, so we can't stick a recruiter account on it. So it's like, that's a little bit weird. But and I'm speaking to my account manager at LinkedIn going, I don't think this is how it works, and she's going, no, you're right, that's not how it works. So I'm sort of putting her in contact with my member of staff to get the account back and all of that sort of stuff, but it's just weirdly not happening. So we're going along, and about a week, maybe 2 weeks later, this individual is recording videos for us where they're getting all about our business model wrong, which is super helpful when you've got an internal member of staff that's 2 weeks in and still doesn't know what we do, despite having lots of documentation. Also, keep on calling
what type of video, like what type of videos, like what?
oh, I will play you some of these videos. I've still got them, and they are fecking funny. They are the worst sales videos ever. Like, genuinely, they are atrocious.
This person's the front of house for your business.
Well, it was meant to be. Thankfully, didn't get that far because it would have been a complete shit show. So we're sort of a few weeks in, and Rob, my ops director at that point, ops manager, was going away. So he's away on holiday, and I'm And I'm sat there and I'm going, right, she hasn't actually sent, oh, I've called her a she now, so we're one step further to saying who this person is. So we're sat there and I'm like, you haven't sent me any people. And then magically all these people appear from LinkedIn Recruiter. I'm like, hang on a minute. I haven't given you a LinkedIn Recruiter account. So what's going on? So I video call this individual and I'm like, hang on, how have you got this? And she's, because she's told us she hasn't got any other computers, she doesn't have any other accounts, blah, blah, blah. So she goes, oh yeah, no. My new company that I was going to work for, because she was meant to join somebody else and then flipped last minute to join us, has set up an account for me. And they put a LinkedIn Recruiter. So I'm just using that. I was like, that's a bit dodgy. So maybe let's not do that. But right, okay. So then, but whilst I'm on that video call, there's an Apple screen in the background. And I'm an Apple user. So I recognize the backgrounds of Apple screens because nobody ever changes them and they're all the same. So I'm like, that's a fucking computer. So hang on, she's got no computers in the house, but there's a fucking laptop over there. So what's going on? So I am sat there and I call up Rob and I'm like, Rob, I know you're on holiday, but I've got some concerns. And because I've said that to him a number of times and I'm yet to be wrong, his exact words were, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm on holiday. Like, what's happened now? And so I explained, he said, well, why don't you just have a look around? So I look around, find that other LinkedIn profile and see who it's attached to. So I decided basically that I was Poirot because I'm very bored and immature. So occasionally, so I was like, right, fuck it, I'm going to reach out to these people. So I reached out to this company and said, hey, random question. I think you were going to have someone that was going to join you. Did they join you or did they not? Just like, I know it's a bit random, but I'm just a bit like, this is all a bit weird. They went, oh yeah, you know, they're doing an RPO with us and they work within one of our clients. I was like, oh, okay, right. Well, that person also works for me. And they're like, oh, what, in the evenings or weekends? I was like, no. Full-time, like full-time job, yeah, proper contract, like full-time hours. So yeah, it turns out working at two places. And I wish that was the end of the story because that would be not that stressful. But so Rob comes back from holiday a few days later. And of course, unfortunately, the first person pulled the parachute the quickest because I wanted to sort of let it mull a bit and do it properly. But no, he pulled the parachute and called her up and told her to take a long walk off a short pier. So, fast forward a few days, Rob's drafting the termination letter and he goes, do you think she ever left the other business? So I was sat there going, hadn't really thought about that, but you know what? There's only one way to find out. So I call them up and I call up a random number that I found for them. And it turned out it was like a sort of candidate application number. And some random consultant calls me up and goes, hi, I've had a missed call from this number. Like, can I help? Like, are you looking for a job? And I was like, no, a bit more random than that. I think this person used to work for you. I'm just wondering if that's the case. And the bloke went, she's in my team. I'm like, what? Hang on a minute. Hang on. So she's still in your team? And he went, yeah. And he's like, why? I've got to be honest, mate. This is a bit weird. So why are you asking about this? So I went, well, it's weird for you and it's weirder for me because she's also in my team. So he immediately
wait till you hear.
Yeah. Well, no, he immediately goes, I've got to be honest, this is massively above my pay grade. So I'll get the owner to reach out to you. So the owner reaches out to me and we have a chat about the situation because I've been told this business is toxic. They hate women. It's like the Wolf of Wall Street, all of this sort of stuff. I want to work remotely, but they don't trust me. Ironically, that would have been the best thing ever for this individual. So, go through this entire process. And we're kind of all in agreement that we need to, because it's a common name. Like, again, I'm not going to use the name, but we're talking like a John Smith kind of name. It's not John Smith, just before anyone starts to work it out and somebody called John Smith tries to sue me. But let's call it a female version of John Smith. And so female version of John Smith, we were like, there is a risk here, especially as there is a fair chance that the profiles have some quite different looking pictures, that we're not talking about the same person. So we all agree to share enough information for us to confirm that it's the same person. So We do that. We all realize it is, and then of course we all go Foxtrot Oscar. You've had your time with us. We weirdly don't employ fraudsters, so do one. And yeah, it got better because one of the businesses she tried to take to an employment tribunal for not paying her for work that she told the other two businesses she wasn't doing when she tried to keep her jobs with us. The other business she threatened with some other legal action, and she reported us to the ICO for a data breach because we shared her personal information, ignoring the fact that we shared it to a business we knew already had it. And also, if you're investigating something like that, you have the ability to share data because you can, to investigate fraud and like people that are doing things against your business and all sorts of other stuff. So yeah, that happened. But the real icing on the cake is now, as you well know, I'm seeing this individual pop up all over the place. And that's the thing that's making me chuckle. So actually, sorry, before we get to that, how we met is I put a post up about it, and the post did quite well. And you reached out to me and were like...
Allegedly, I can't go into much detail here.
Because, yeah, allegedly, can't go into much detail, but reached out to me and said he liked my post, nothing more. There was nothing more than that. He said, I like your post. And anyone that thinks that anything else was said in that conversation is a liar. So yeah, and we joked about it, and I think we had quite a similar sense of humour. And yeah, we've got on reasonably well since. But yeah, that individual now apparently is an expert in things like remote working and all of those sorts of things, and is currently doing a roadshow of talking about remote working. And to me, it's a bit like Jordan Belfort doing talks about earning money the right way. It's sort of that level of, okay, fuck it. Let's just get rid of the rule book. In fact, my motivation is going to come exclusively from Belmarsh Prison going forward. So yeah, so that's one of them. But yeah, she's still beaten by the bloke who got caught with £1 million worth of cocaine a few weeks after leaving us. So like, he wins the turd Olympics. But yeah, that she's up there. So yeah. I enjoy playing battleships. Whenever anyone's like, I've had a bad lever, I'm like, right, let's get out the top trumps cards. And my last trump card is, so did you have someone that left that did an ICO complaint, and then you had to call the ICO and explain to them that you couldn't give him his personal data because he's in jail after being caught with £1 million worth of cocaine and several duffel bags of cannabis. And
who would run a remote business?
Yeah, exactly. But thankfully, for a little while, I don't think I've had any drug smugglers. Or if I have, they've been a little more effective in their ability to do it, which... Look, the crime is getting caught, isn't it? We all know that. So,
do you do any personality vetting, like any tests like that?
Well, with that guy, so we had to involve the police because he nicked some of our stuff and did some other dodgy stuff. And the police literally went, do you do DBS checks on your staff? And I was like, no. And he went, you should. Yeah. Well, brilliant. Thanks for that. So, we do some stuff, but... But yeah, I did. So to be fair, I did, ignoring the nonsense, I did psychology at university. So if people think they're having conversations without me working out what I think their personality type is and stuff like that, that would be naive. But then if people can't be bothered to read my profile and see what I did, then yeah, more for them. So yeah.
It doesn't just happen in remote business, this sort of thing, though. I've seen it firsthand where a guy's come into an office with a second laptop, having been a contract consultant, and disappeared for like hours on end, like half the day. And this person's a manager. He's like, oh, where have you been? I was like, oh, just making some calls from the atrium, whatever. So it's there are people out there that will bend every rule that they can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It just remote makes it a bit easier because, well, I say it makes it a bit easier. It makes the perception of the fraudster that it's going to be easier because they think that nobody can see what they're doing. There was that Australian lady who got basically sacked, and it all came out when she took them to an employment tribunal very recently. It went viral on TikTok, and they put keystroke stuff on her computer because they knew she wasn't doing anything, and there were days where she just didn't turn up. And it's like, well, what do you think is going to be the upshot of what happens if someone pays you to work, yeah, and you just say you are working and then just disappear off on holiday or whatever? Someone eventually is going to go, you know what, I don't think this person's doing their job. But weirdly, that's the thing. You know, when I say I've got unlimited flexibility, that's the thing about it. Because if somebody comes on board and does really bloody well, and let's say at the start of the month, they make shed load of placements and all of those stay in, do I care what they do the rest of the month? Not really. Go
and... Your business needs to be at a certain size and to have a certain amount of cash to be able to play that game. I think if you're... you were billing £1 million, you said, right? So that meant that means that there was reserves there to have a bit of a gamble.
Come the early days, and we've got investment, so so we're in a reasonable position.
Why did you take investment?
It was actually more of a skill set thing. So I was sat in a position where I have strengths and I have weaknesses, and I'm very aware of my weaknesses. I'm aware of the weaknesses I'm aware of. I'm sure there's shitloads that I'm not. So I wanted somebody who was quite different than me, had been very successful previously, had stepped on a lot of landmines that I'm likely to step on my way up the greasy pole to success, or the greasy ladder to success. But I wanted that person to have some skin in the game and be invested in it, so that their decision making isn't that of somebody who's sterile. It's somebody who's got something to lose. So that's why.
No, if you can buy in that, that's great. If it doesn't cost you too much, you know.
No, it didn't. So I got 10%, and a fairly decent amount of money. So it was fine.
Brilliant.
It allows me to keep doing some of my half daft decisions that seemingly are now going quite well. So it's good.
Will you ever try somebody without experience?
Yes, but not in the form of what we traditionally hire. So with some of the consultants we've got, they're bringing on an amount of work that it's physically impossible for them to manage. And because we're not fixed in one vertical, so lots of our consultants do lots of different things because they're bringing their client base and their experience, there are going to probably in the very, well, reasonably short term be a need for things like delivery consultants or resources, whatever people like to call them, to be sat underneath some of these individuals. And some of those individuals wish to concentrate on doing the business development there. Right. And account management. And I'm very happy for people to do that, but they build their desk into that basically. Mm. And we will require at a certain point a function to get those people to a level of quality that they're not going to destroy that consultant's business basically. So yes, there will be an inflection point where that will be required, but that won't be what, as a core business, we are actively recruiting for. We will always be on the lookout for that next 360 consultant with I spoke to a guy today that's got the doing seven figures a year and sort of gave him our maths. And he was like, that's quite a bit more than I'm earning at the moment. I'm like, yep, because let's be realistic. You wouldn't join me if it wasn't. So somebody like that may well end up needing additional support because they're at full chat anyway. So if they've got massive clients that want them to do other stuff, they don't want to be in a business where they say no. So we need to create an infrastructure around them to allow them to do that. So yeah, there will be a need for it, but that won't be something that I'm hiring, if that makes sense. So the bit that I'm doing as the sort of owner of it is I'm strategy and trying to work to attract the right people and get our messaging out there. So a big part of what we're doing on social media and all of that sort of stuff is ensuring that we're getting our messaging out there all the time, so that basically we irritate people into wanting to find out more with positive vibes.
Positive vibes, yeah. What's the ultimate goal? It's not to sell it, right? Because it is to sell it.
Yeah.
Who will buy it if it's doing lots of different things?
Somebody who wants the best platform for 360 recruiters that has 30 people a month joining and knows that the average person within that will perform at a certain level. This is all data we're collating already. So it's the same as who would want to buy a law firm where none of the lawyers are employed. And the answer you would think is nobody, because there's no security. But who wants to buy one of the fastest growing platforms in the legal world that's turnover is doubling or tripling every year? lots of people, but it tends to be more of a flirtation. But you're going to stay
with just legal, or you're doing biotech, you're doing legal, you're doing...
Yeah, but the relevance isn't what we are doing from a vertical perspective, because I'm not going to be selling it on the recruitment market. I'm going to be selling it as a very fast-growing platform, not as a recruitment business.
To who?
Probably a flotation, so is my guess. So it'll probably be listing it. It's likely to be the best return, because that's where other comparable businesses and other sectors have had their greatest success.
Okay.
Because what you're selling, you're not selling what you do. You're selling the average performance of the people that are there and the ability to bring on a lot more of them. So they're buying a business that's growing exponentially, rather than buying a business that's doing any one particular thing. So it's not the way recruitment businesses work and are valued are not what we are aiming for. We are aiming for a different thing, in the same way that law firms used to be valued at what is the client base worth? How much money has it made? What's it cost to run? And that was the thing. And then it was a very small multiple above that. Mm. Whereas these law firms are valued at how many people can you bring on? How quickly are you doing it? Who's staying around and what are they doing on average? And then you go, okay, you're bringing in 20 a month. You're making an average of 100,000 off of each of them. So you're making 2 million extra a month, basically. Yeah. But over a period of time, like that's not an instant thing, but it's all mapped out. And so what you're selling is something that's ballooning, basically, and going, we haven't even touched the surface on what we're able to achieve on this. Because we've done it in this market, we're now doing it in this market, and this market is four times the size. So in our case, that'd be America. So that's the plan. I've spoken to some. I tend not to speak to people that value recruitment businesses because they tell me it's a stupid idea. In fact, lots of people in the recruitment world tell me it's a stupid idea. But weirdly, lots of people in other worlds that carry higher valuations understand it, because service providers, two things can offer, carry a much higher valuation than the sort of professional services business might. So I'm trying to change the game. That's the aim. But I'm a minnow at the moment. So what I'm saying is all just a load of like bollocks coming out of my mouth. But that business I built to well bigger than I'm planning on building this within a 10-year period. And I can promise you it's much more difficult to persuade a lawyer to go and work with no salary and move their clients than it is to persuade a recruiter that I will pay you a salary, you move your clients, and I'll just pay you way more and give you more flexibility and better incentives and all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we're not struggling to find people who are interested. That there is, like with everything, there's a very small proportion of people who are interested that are suitable. But like, we're getting 200 plus applications a week. Like on Monday, I stuck up an ad because I forgot to do one over the weekend, and got, I think, 130 on Monday. So I don't know what happened on over the weekend, but people were clearly pissed off with whatever their businesses were doing. And within that, there's a couple of 300 grand billers, a person who bills 600 grand. And this is headlines. Yeah. There's not been much deep diving in that, because actually on Monday I was violently ill. So I didn't spend too much time paying attention to it. But there's about 13 conversations that are now going on.
What you're telling is there's a demand. There's product market fit from the people
that want to work remotely, want more freedom and flexibility, but want to earn way more money, because they've been there, done it, got the t-shirt. And they're probably the people that would have gone and done their own thing, but are scared of doing that. And joining us is a sort of happy middle ground, because they get a lot of the freedom and flexibility, a lot of the increased earning potential, but still have the security of a salary and still have the security of somebody else paying for all their licenses and colleagues that they can refer stuff to and receive referrals from and all that sort of stuff. So we're a more familiar step than going out and straight doing your own thing. And yeah.
Well, guys, we're
about this, because that's fucking boring. So
we're an hour in now. So
welcome to the world of me waffling.
no, you've been great. Probably liable, but whatever.
We didn't say a name. We just said a gender. There's half. Well, there's 7 billion people. There's 3.5 billion females. So yeah.
Right. Okay. One last thing. How can we build this remote training platform that will help a non-traditional business like you? Where's the skill gaps? What would make your life easier from a training and development perspective?
I think it's the same as most other businesses, because a lot of even very good recruiters have fallen into bad habits, because we've come out of a market for the last few years where you could basically throw 100 darts at a dartboard and 95 of them would hit the bullseye. So that's not the world that anyone that's been in recruitment longer than post-COVID has seen. But even people who were around before that, many of them have forgotten what it takes to do the job properly. So that's around business development, around adding value to clients, around building relationships. And I mean, proper building relationships. So many people are still trying to throw shit at a wall and hope it sticks. So I do think in any business, I think the geographical location of someone from an L&D perspective is probably borderline irrelevant. I think the most important message that people need to learn at the moment is don't do a half-assed job. And so many people are like, and I've had people that have joined who historically have been superstars and documented and proved that they're superstars, who have got into bad habits over the last few years that they don't seem to be able to get themselves out of. So I think now is the time for an L&D platform, because where the market is a bit tighter than it was in 2021, early 2022, those bad habits need to be ironed out, and ironed out fast, because otherwise some very big businesses will go down the swanny, because you can't afford to hold people who don't have the skills. And if you want to keep them, you need to skill them back up. So yeah, I think BD, relationships and all of that sort of side is key, because going on a job board or LinkedIn recruiter and tapping in a skill and finding someone and sending them a message is a very easy part of the job. Whereas going out there and building meaningful relationships with candidates and clients has more of an art to it if it's done properly. And the very successful recruiters do that properly. The mediocre ones do not.
Any last thoughts for us, Mr. Alexander? Alexander Dick and Dan Alexander. Hey,
yeah,
how did you not pick this up?
Yeah, nice and confusing.
Certain strength to it, I thought I find. I would just ask you, just on your side, the question of, because obviously you're saying that you're using these other companies as your L&D platform, right? So how much work do you have to do, or do you do, what work do you do to course correct and actually develop experienced consultants within the business? Like, how do you, someone's like okay, but they're not at their potential. Like, what do you do to course correct them currently?
So I will at the moment, which is unsustainable on a larger scale, a lot of that will fall to me. And I will try and encourage them to use the core behaviors I used that made me able to achieve what I was able to achieve, and explain how I spun the plates and how I managed to have the number of processes going at any one time that I did by flipping responsibilities onto different parties whilst still controlling how that works and things like that. So some sort of psychological tricks that I've learned along the way that make people want to get back to you rather than you have to chase them, and just stuff like that, which takes the pressure off of having to chase hundreds of people all the time. So I impart a lot of what I've done to others, and actually I've had a chap approach me over this week, and so I'm now doing that outside of my own business as well. I've had a really nice guy approach me and ask if I can help him get to his full potential, and for some reason I said yes. He just seems like a nice guy, and on the condition that if he starts his own business, I get a chunk of it. But let's get him going first.
It's because he's nice guy.
No, but that's the thing. I spent a lot of time. I've spent a massive amount of my career helping people entirely for free. And if I look back at the amount that I could have done from that, yes, it gave me a certain amount of satisfaction, but it sort of, it devalues what I'm doing. And so yeah, I'm happy to help people externally, but they but that's that. I don't want that to be a large part of my working life. I'm putting out enough fires internally the whole time. I don't want to be dealing with too many other people's. But
well, we'd love to get your eyes on the beta of.
Yeah, no, I'd love to look at this. I'd be very happy to take an additional samurai sword
let's carve it up.
Yeah. Let's just go nuts. I'll bring the lighter fuel. You've got the swords and the chainsaw. I'll bring a match and some lighter fuel.
Dan's going to be like 2 feet tall by the end of it. Hey?
Dan's just going to hate us all. He'll just stop returning calls. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. He's just going to stop returning everyone's calls.
And, yeah. Every recruiter thinks they know it all as well. Everybody thinks they know it all. And yeah. He put down a framework. He's like, I'm the one who's actually trained people. I've trained people for years.
Yeah. See, these 1,000 people that are successful, none of them are to do with you idiots.
All right, guys, that's us. It is Friday. Let's go enjoy ourselves. Thank you very much, Alexander Dick and Dan Alexander, everybody.
Cheers.